morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans.
Good morning. Here we are on Democratic Perspective one more time. Easy for you to say. Gary LeMaster, how are you doing this morning?
Good. How are you?
Very good.
I'm sitting in for our usual host, Steve Williamson, who is hopefully basking on the beach in California somewhere.
Hopefully, yes. I'm flying left seat, as they say, this morning, and we're going to talk about Arizona politics, and we do want to wish Steve well in the California sunshine.
And we do miss him.
And we do miss him, absolutely.
And you will, too, because you have to listen to me.
That's right. That's right. Yes, we wanted to do a focused, organized show on Arizona politics, but then we said, well, it's Arizona politics, and as we it became less clear that we could do a focused, organized show on the Arizona legislature, but we're going to certainly give it our best. We thought that being a political show, I mean, we do all kinds of shows here on Democratic Perspective, but we are back into politics, and we want to talk a little bit about Arizona politics because there's so much to talk about.
What kind of new hell does the Arizona legislature, the Republican legislature, have in store for us this year?
Exactly. Dorothy Parker said, what fresh hell is this? And I think that's good. And the Republic, one of the editorial writers in the Republic did say something about this hysteria that happens as they get toward the end of the session, you know. My friends that were Arizona natives talked about the 90-day session, and I guess they extended it. But whenever the Arizona legislature is in session, it's a long time to hold your breath. And there could be nothing further from the truth.
Especially with the strike everything bills. You know, if you're not familiar with that, it's if a bill gets killed or doesn't make it out of committee, you can take the same number, bill number, and change the entire content of the bill through strike everything and hope to slide it through with little scrutiny.
Yeah, that would be deep politics considered by some, but it is true. For those of us for those people that watch the Arizona legislature, pay attention to what's going through, you follow it by the bill number. You know, it's SB 1062, SB 1070, whatever. And so if the content of that bill changes, you know, you can go to bed thinking the bill is one thing and wake up finding out the bill is completely something else. So the strike everything is, this two side effect, somebody debated it in some publication in Arizona recently. And of course the guy in favor of the strike everything was kind of a lobbyist business guy, you know.
Well, he's said that the benefit of it is that you can fix things at the last minute.
Right.
The fix, you know, has two different meanings, however. And the real problem with it is that these things get slid into the docket and without any public content because the public doesn't know what's going on.
Exactly, and we want to talk about that too. That's this legislative session and the governor. You got relatively conservative columnists in Arizona newspapers asking whether Doug Ducey's a dictator. And clearly, I mean, should we call you Fidel? Is what Lori Roberts said. I don't know. That's a little for a new governor. It seems a little in your face. Don't get me wrong. I'm an in your face kind of guy.
Well, from his first actions, you can see that he's a bad business person because everything he's done so far has been bad for business in the state of Arizona.
Well, let's get into that. And that's kind of our biggest problem here on Democratic Perspective is that ideologically driven. legislation is bad. It's bad for business, for certainly. So, so maybe try to. You know, all of these things are so backwards, but that's when we started the show. That was our purpose. So you have the party, the Republican Party, that's supposed to be business friendly, being the worst party for business. The Arizona, the Chamber of Commerce, the business leaders begged Jan Brewer not to sign 1070, the immigration law. She signed it. She knew it would get her reelected. And what it did for business.
We lost tens of millions of dollars in revenue from conventions and possible relocations.
I was going to say incalculable, but you know what? It is calculable. We could. She didn't sign 1062, the discrimination bill, because they begged her not to, and she listened this time. The Arizona's reputation for crazy, and now the anti-education wave of the governor and the Arizona legislature is you ran businesses. What things did you look for?
Well, the things when you look to expand or relocate, the issues that you tend to examine the most are the supply, ready supply of workforce, a trained, educated workforce. So when you cut education severely, it makes businesses thinking about Arizona look twice. One of the other things that you look for that's near the top is the availability of transportation.
Right.
And, we have a bill, it's not a bill. We have a bill that's trying to fix it. But a few years ago, the state legislature decided to throw another snit towards the federal government when Homeland Security was created they wanted to change, ordered the change of driver's licenses across the country to more difficult to counterfeit. And so now we're in a situation that if they don't pass a bill this year called the Real ID Bill, that our driver's licenses will not get us on an airline.
Right.
We will not get through the security at the airport with a standard Arizona driver's license. You'll have to have a passport in order to fly.
This is an easy fix. And yet this once again, ideology, I guess, this standing up to the federal government, they think, I guess, that it gets them elected. And so it, for that reason, this is not being fixed easily. We are going to look at this morning a list of bills, and we're going to identify them by content, not so much by number, for one of the reasons, because of the strike, everything. We're borrowing this. There was some of you may have seen it in the Arizona Republic yesterday, but these are bills they should pass and bills that they shouldn't pass, and bills that somehow did sneak out of the legislature and the governor should veto. But we want to talk about the economics as much as possible of some of these things. So the first thing that they should pass is the Real ID.
Arizona was afraid, the legislature was afraid, especially the Republican-dominated legislature, was afraid of a national ID.
Right.
So they decided not to adopt the Homeland Security standards in 2008. And so it hasn't really become an issue. The government gave all of the states plenty of time, 7 years, to figure out what they were going to do and give them the opportunity to fix their IDs. And we've done nothing until now, and it's still not clear that the bill is going to pass.
The Republic says don't let it fall victim to Washington hate. I find it interesting that everybody complains about the government, but this is... beyond.
And if you're going to run a business, you know, as I mentioned, transportation is a big thing. So if you can't easily fly in and out of Arizona, in and out of the state, and have your vendors and suppliers easily, you know, fly in and out, then you're going to be less likely to relocate here.
Yeah, actually, we do have some numbers there. That's Bill 1273. The Department of Child Safety Transparency, they talked about bills that where the agency could, the Department of Child Safety replaced Child Protective Services.
And recently had its budget cut, as I understand it. In the new budget bill, you know, there was this big outcry last year and in the year before about Child Protective Services. So they come up with a new department that that reports directly to the governor. And then they fund it. And then in the new budget bill that passed, they cut some of the funding and they replaced the director already in a year. And there are some major issues with it, and I've read numerous articles that the people working for the Department of Child Safety are overwhelmed with cases and understaffed. And so there's some big issues with it, but these are two good things they could do to help
the department. At least. Exactly. But let's interrupt ourselves. And we were talking before we went on the air about two sides to any P&L statement, two sides to the profit and loss sheet. And Arizona completely ignores the revenue side, that there are plenty of ways in a low tax state. And especially when we're talking about child services, including education and Department of Child Safety, that Arizonans repeatedly say, poll after poll, that they would not only be willing to spend more money on, that they're willing to be taxed more to provide more for these agencies, for education and for child safety. And a legislature is ignoring the will of the people clearly. And I realize, you can't jump at every poll is what their response might be. But this case, you got to be a responsible leader. Doesn't mean just cut the budget.
People of all ideologies like kids and want to see kids taken care of. And so when you cut funding for education, you cut funding for things like the Department of Child Safety, it really kind of, cuts to the heart of virtually everyone in the state.
Well, that's it. And they've got to look at the revenue side, and there's lots and lots and lots of things that they can do.
If it's, to further that, every business, I used to run a business, every business has P&Ls, profit and loss statements,
right.
And you kind of base your planning on those P&Ls. And there's, balance sheets. There are two sides to every balance sheet. And unfortunately, the right wing believes, they always talk about having government run like a business, that it be really efficient like a business. Well, most people that say that have either never run a business or they've never dealt with large corporations that are more bureaucratic even than the government. But, there's two sides to a balance sheet. One is cost, which the right wing is very intent on, and they keep wanting to cut costs of all sorts. But the side they always forget is the revenue side. And if you're running a business, you're always looking for new ways to generate revenue.
Well, that said, the same thing, they're always comparing which is absurd, by the way, comparing state budget and government budget to personal budgets. But in that comparison, when I needed more money, I went out and got more work or a better job. I mean, I had the ability to do that. I increased my revenue side. Still do it, by the way. And I'll probably do it until I drop over. But so there is that aspect of it. There are things that they can do to keep the good things going. and the important things going, like education, like child safety.
You don't pull your kids out of school just because your budget took a hit to save money.
We want to look at the other bills that...
Let's finish on the child safety. There's two bills that really need to pass, and budgets aside, and one is mandate background checks of anyone living in a household before returning foster kids to that
They're
household.
Calling that Angel's Law because of the child that was killed by a boyfriend.
So it's just common sense. You don't put a kid back in a situation that's dangerous to the kid if you can avoid it.
House Bill 2640 should pass.
And that's a consideration of any history of domestic violence or sexual assault in the household before allowing a child to return to the parent.
Right. Yeah, at least some clear black background check. I mean, it's one of those things that you say, they're not doing that already?
But, it should be a no-brainer. It absolutely no-brainer. Should pass.
Political committee definition. Some people like this and that it should pass. This is 2649. She's calling it a First Amendment. Representative Michelle Ugenti is she's calling this a First Amendment safeguard for election time speech. This comes in reaction to a judge's ruling tossing out the state's definition of what a political committee is as being too vague. And so it's just a fix. Since the state no longer has a definition of a political committee, it probably should have one. And so they can decide what is political speech and what isn't political speech based on who is making it.
There's another bill on the other side of that very issue of political speech that should not pass, and that's the bill that would limit the educators, school superintendents and principals and teachers from speaking out on any political bill. So they would, if the bill passes, and it looks like it well might, it would not allow a superintendent to go to the public and explain the need for a budget override.
This is absolute craziness. I mean, this is out there. I mean, it's in superintendent's job description statewide, and the Dave Likenses and then the Paul Ties for Mingus and Sedona Oak Creek, the superintendents, they come out into this community and they explain the finances, including overrides. And that's what that's part of their job description. School board members come into the community. They are on the school board, elected members of the school board. Part of their job is to explain finances, school finances, to folks.
And if you're in the district, don't you want to know what the school's finances
from the experts,
from the people managing
the people
those finances
directly involved with it? So I mean, this is beyond. This is, I don't know how to characterize this vindictive. When the legislature started to hate educators, I'm not quite getting it.
I think it's because we've cut education so much in the state. Now the legislators are tired of
people complaining
of
about
people complaining, especially superintendents and teachers. So they want to pass a bill that prevents those. It would make it a fine for speaking out. If they want to prevent them from ever discussing the issue that and making the legislators look bad.
Yeah, if you look it up, the Mesa superintendent, huge district, biggest district in the state, I believe, maybe except for maybe Tucson, came out questioning, as far as I'm concerned, very mildly, had some issues with the state legislature and their educational funding policy.
And Ducey's dark money supporters, Sean Noble in particular, immediately sent out robocalls attacking the Mesa superintendent. So this is just trying to limit free speech. It's unconstitutional.
Well, that's it. I mean, that's the other thing. It's going to be struck down. They have to know. I mean, I guess you don't have to pass a test to be a legislator, especially in Arizona, unless it's a...
It'd be good if they'd read our Constitution, both the state Constitution and the federal Constitution.
Well, exactly. So they know these things are going to be struck down. They know they're going to be challenged, and yet they passed them anyway, once again, for ideological posturing. I do want to talk about more bills, but I also want to talk about Sean Noble, since you brought him up, who may be one of the three most powerful men in the state. I mean, he... In this last couple of years, he got his reputation as a bundler of dark money.
And he's becoming one of the richest men in the state thanks to his bundling of money for political campaigns.
And that's good to know. I know where to go for a loan. And what we mean here, he'll take money from various conservative organizations and corporations, and then channel it to Arizona candidates.
Call it what it really is. It's money laundering. It's, yeah. He's taking money from the Koch brothers and other people like that, and then in order to hide who is donating to campaigns, then he funnels it out into various front nonprofits, front groups that then spend money on political campaigns. So you get something like American Encore, which Sean Noble was involved with, and you look at American Encore and what's that? Who's that? And so you have to go to a great extent to look it up on the web and find out who's behind it. But you can't, even doing that, you can't tell where the money's coming from.
Right. And that's the idea. And most people won't do that. American Encore is the group responsible, I believe, for making the robocalls. Mm-hmm. And it was surprising to a number of people in the district saying, why am I getting robocalls after the election? You know, this sounds like this attack, it sound like an attack call that you would get during an election, and yet in this case, it's after the election, supporting Ducey's education policy.
Cuts.
So it's a different ballgame out there. They have so much money that they can do this after election.
Politics, 24/7, every year.
For those, this is for the ASU Morrison Institute on Public Policy. A guy named David Berman did a great paper on dark money in Arizona politics. You probably, if you're interested, if this is shocking to you, then please read this great research. He, and it's a subject for a whole show sometime. We've already talked dark money in the past, but we have a 45-minute show. I think it's so involved we could have done 4 hours. Because of the Supreme Court laws and the anonymity of hiding who is donating. Now you got people like Sean Noble, and this is a scary. This is the philosophy here that the quote is that. There's nothing wrong with anonymous political contributions because it protects the contributor from scrutiny. And people will be more willing to contribute if they know that they're not going to be held accountable, was the way I would put it.
For their views.
His quote. And so this is Orwellian in the extreme. He said, I firmly believe that anonymous political speech is not a danger to our nation and has played an important role throughout our history. Anonymity in political speech protects the speaker from retribution, but it also serves a greater good. It also allows the public to listen to ideas without any bias toward the messenger. But that's, I mean, the whole point of listening to a message is being able to evaluate who's giving the message. I mean, you know, you don't ask the barber if you need a haircut is what we used to say back in the. Of course, I have to admit that lost some of its meaning over the years.
If you're not held accountable, you can lie as much as you want, and you can be as vicious as you want. You know, we're in a system now, thanks to the Supreme Court that ruled that money equals free speech, and then ruled that corporations are people, and then have been eliminating the caps on political donations. As a result, you're getting, you know, anonymous people, you know, corporations as well, throwing money at these dark money groups.
And, well, that's it. And just to get both,
and they can outspend the average citizens.
And believe me, they're outspending the unions, and they're outspending poor George Soros. You know, I mean, everybody, the only liberal anybody know, and they're outspending Hollywood. I read somewhere 10-1. I wanted to quote real quickly another conservative, not another, but a conservative Arizona columnist. I believe he's editor of the, he used to be editor of the editorial papers, Doug McCarson.
McCarson, I think.
Arizona elections are becoming thoroughly consumed by such anonymous spending, known as dark money. It overwhelms spending on the U.S. Senate race here, as well as nearly all the contested congressional races and many of the legislative races. So we want to be clear here that the dark money in Arizona is, and we're not the only state, but they really, really get a lot of, we get a lot of it because it's so effective here. It doesn't take as much as maybe it takes in a place like California or other states, that the money is pouring in from the Republic is a Gannett newspaper, but they are doing I think a pretty darn good job of at least getting the record. There are pieces I don't know that make the print edition, but certainly not the online edition, that track where the money's coming from, who the biggest donors are. Once again, topic for another show. They list the four biggest donors. Actually, they list all the big donors in Arizona politics in this last election. And as far as they can, at least you don't know who's giving the money to the nonprofits, the dark money, but we can tell at least who is, what nonprofits are channeling the money into Arizona politics. You know, the absurdity of all of this is you can't tell who's behind the money, who actually gave the cash to the nonprofits. But you can speculate.
You know, let's get back to bills that okay. Let's get to some bills that should be killed, and you know, one of those is the result of political spending from the National Rifle Association, which
weapons in public buildings. I mean, give me a break, guys.
It would allow citizens with concealed carry permits to take weapons into public buildings. Now. It's estimated that this bill will cost the state another $16 million a year. But I think it's an easy way to solve that. Let's expand this bill to include the state capitol and the legislature. And so if we have to go into public buildings where we are
faced with
armed people, let's make sure the legislators and the governor can do that too. But somehow they always put a limit on that.
This is Bill 2320, and regardless of how you feel about the right to bear arms, this is not, and I realize this is Arizona, and we have a lot of gun advocates here, and that's fine. This is not one of those issues. This is not a limit on the Second Amendment.
Even Tombstone in the old days had limits on guns in the city limits. So I think we can do that with public buildings.
Well, that's it. I mean, the pundits claim it's nothing more than a blatant pandering to the NRA for...
To get an A-plus rating for the next political campaign.
To get contributions.
There's another bill. It's HB 2431. This is my favorite. This was sponsored by our, you know, LD6, our own very own Bob Thorpe and Brenda Barton. And it's called the Uniform Firearms Transfer Compact. And what it really would do is create a compact of like-minded government, federal government hating states, the old Confederacy, probably, right, to govern firearms. So we would give up our legislatures and our citizens' ability to regulate, to put any form of regulation on firearms, and we would turn it over to a consortium of states, and they would, even if our legislature changed its mind several years down the road, or citizens wanted to pass a law, you know, regulating guns, we wouldn't be unable to do it because we'd have to go convince the compact to do it first.
The other thing, the Common Core repeal is a bill that should fail. This is just a, once again, Washington hate, that you can't tell us what to do. Everybody that, you know, that ran on anti-Common Core, I'm not sure ever looked at it, but I think the state superintendent and the governor finally actually looked at it and got briefed on the Common Core standards and say, hey, you know, this isn't so bad, other than the word "common" in the title.
The weird thing about it is the federal government has really nothing to do with it except to provide some subsidies for states that adopt educational standards. This Common Core standard was created by governors across the country, both Republican and Democratic. And it was, you know, with the input of educators, and the idea was to create standards so that if a student moves from one district to another or from one state to another, they wouldn't be lost in a new school. They would be, you know, having to deal with the same kinds of studies that they had in their old school.
And I've worked under them both at the college and other educational environments. They've already been in place 5 or 6 years. So Arizona schools have already spent millions to implement these rather innocuous standards, and in some cases, they compared to the previous standards, they are more brief to the point, and an improvement. So,
No Child Left Behind was an abject failure. All it did was teach kids how to take tests. Common Core, you know, promises to be something much better. And we've, like Mike said, we've spent a lot of money already trying to implement it. So if we repeal it as Brenda Barton wants to do, then we would be going back and starting all over again.
House Bill 2246 wants to allow opting out of the Arizona Merit Test, which is the test that tests the Common Core standards. So these two things kind of go together. And this replaces AIMS, by the way. If you've been in the state for a while, you heard AIMS for a long, long time. Well, Arizona Merit's replacing that.
And if with this bill passes, it would likely cost the state about $600 million annually in federal education funds. As if we already are spending way too much that we could take $600 million out of our education budget. It's just nonsense.
And then the Republic is recommending killing the $15, a $10 or $15 cap on speeding tickets, on some speeding tickets. As a bad idea. This is Bill 2262. According to some of the analysts, it could push freeway speeds to 95 miles an hour.
It's an attempt by, you know, as the legislature has been fighting against the federal government for federal overreach, at the same time, they've been attacking city and county governments with state overreach. And so this bill basically would penalize cities and counties for having fines that would be greater than $15, as well as capping out speeding fines in the state.
Even Milquetoast Arizona Horizon, with the journalist roundtable that they do on Friday nights, if you watch PBS ever, the host pointed out the hypocrisy of the Arizona legislature bristling and fighting tooth and nail anything from the federal government, and yet hammering cities, towns, and counties to keep them from any sort of meaningful autonomy, or at least, I mean, that's a more strong statement than is happening. But certainly in a lot of areas when it comes to money, the legislature still wants to put horrible hobbles on cities and towns.
Another example is SB 1291, which is a Bob Thorpe and Sylvia Allen bill that would establish penalties for any city or county that passes more strict rules on firearms than the state allows. So, in other words, the legislature wants to control everything dealing with firearms, but then they're going to turn it over to a group of states to take it completely out of our hands. So the local governments can't have a say in it at all. Let's get to one of my most hated bills.
Go ahead.
Is HB 2150, and that's the what I call the free to torture farm animals bill.
Oh, that's there's a lot of news about that the last 48 hours.
That it would exempt farm animals like horses, cattle, hogs, sheep, poultry, and other farm animals from animal cruelty laws. In particular, they want to, I think what's really behind this is to override federal anti-cruelty laws. So it's another, poke with a sharp stick by the legislature against the federal government.
You're going to be hearing a lot about that in the next few days. I guess they want to do a fix that they can make it not quite so broad, I guess, and keep it from causing any animal abuse.
They want to exempt farm dogs too, so that you can smack them around as much as you want or starve them or whatever. It's just nonsense.
There's once again taken from a great article. There's a lot of comparison of the Phoenix 40, which certainly I remember hearing about when I came to Arizona in 1969, and the kingmakers today, which are the Sean Nobles and those people that are putting the money together. It's when you have a small group of people, and the difference is you got a small group of people deciding who gets into office and who doesn't, in this case based on money. The difference between the people, the Phoenix 40 of many years ago, those wealthy Arizonans and those powerful Arizonans that helped choose who ran for office and who won, is that they lived here and they cared about Arizona and they had businesses here. And what was good, they tried putting, they wanted responsible leadership. And so, I'm famous for saying on Democratic perspective, when business and government get too close, we have a name for that. We call it fascism. And yet the Phoenix 40 was a benevolent fascism. The current
Well, now it's just coming from other places. You know, you have the American Legislative Exchange
Council.
They
have no ties to the state.
They have absolutely no ties. It's just an ideology.
Exactly.
And so they put forward these so-called model legislation bills that they distribute to, you know, legislators all across the country. And those bills get sponsored locally, word for word, from what was written by the national group and put forward. There's also a group in, a very powerful group in Arizona. Well, actually a couple of them. There's the Goldwater Institute that dictates a lot of bills. At least they're located here, but it's an ideological group. And then Kathy Herod's group is another ideologically driven group that controls a lot of legislators.
And then what are they getting for their money?
Well, Kathy Herod's big issue is abortion, and the Goldwater Group or Institute is, I'm not quite sure what's driving them, because I don't think Barry Goldwater would be very happy with the type of legislation that they're pushing.
What I'm suggesting is that former House Speaker Kirk Adams was chairman of the Outside Spending Group, Americans for Responsible Leadership, donated $925,000 to the Ducey campaign, has just been appointed Ducey's chief of staff.
Yes. Let's get on to the last couple of bills.
Yeah, sure.
And we have SB 1445, which is, this has raised a lot of controversy, especially with what's been going on with police recordings, you know, videos nationwide. This bill would prohibit for 60 days the release of the name of any officer involved in a use of force incident, you know, such as shooting a citizen or, you know, a parent, you know, beating. And it would also, this is kind of that's been talked about a good deal, but it would also permanently shield an officer's name in any disciplinary action. So it just is roadblocking transparency. It's taking away transparency from our police departments.
What else?
Involves healthcare, and it's a SB 1318 that forbids insurance companies from offering plans that include abortion coverage. You know, I call it who's the nanny state now.
Oh,
bill.
For sure.
It's just insurance. So you can't even buy insurance to cover that procedure in Arizona if this passes. It also mandates that, and this is why the Republic wants Ducey to veto it. It also mandates that doctors inform patients of that the effects of the morning after pill or abortion pills medication can be reversed. There's absolutely no scientific fact to that. It's junk science, and the medical profession is against it because it would be forcing them to promote, you know, junk science that they don't believe in. So
I'm going to read real quickly. We're almost out of time. We want to talk about next week's show and our sponsors. But once again, in the Republic, YAM Worldwide employees donated $2.35 million. This is GoDaddy, and they had their former GoDaddy executive, Christine Jones, as a Republican governor candidate.
Yeah.
Arizona Public Service, $756,000. TAG Employer Services, they donated $620,000. And this was mostly on the ballot proposition for 122. But please, Salt River Project, when you get down the list, you actually get to the Peterson Group and a couple of other non-Republican-leaning organizations. Well, listen, Arizona politics is wild and crazy and woolly, but it also affects our lives every day. It used to be the Arizona legislature or legislation in general can do their thing, and our lives went on pretty normal. Not so much anymore. We want to thank the Democrats of the Red Rocks.
They have a free movie coming up on Tuesday, April 7th.
There's free movie. Check out their breakfasts at the Old Sedona Bar and Grill. They have great speakers. We want to thank Democrats of the Verde Valley, who, in whatever limbo they are living in, we hope that someday they will come back to us. It's like this is a zombie era, so the Democrats of the Verde Valley could be walking the streets again someday. Next week, we want to talk maybe a little bit about Don Bowles. We had David Fraser on, and he talked about ethics, and we're talking about, so we might want to talk about the old Don Bowles case. Really interesting, fascinating stuff.
Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.